We all love mob movies. Scarface, The Godfather, the list goes on and on. But there's one movie that speaks to me above all others. Donnie Brasco starring Johnny Depp. In season one of Deep Cover, we discovered the real story behind Donnie's time undercover with the New York Mafia and what it was like spending 6 years with some of the wildest wise guys you'll ever come across. I'm your host, Leo Rossi, and I've spent my life behind and in front of the cameras, creating stories about the mob. This season, we're going even deeper into the Donnie Brasco story. We'll learn more about the man behind the persona, Joe Pistone, and his time as the most decorated undercover agent in FBI history.
Welcome back to Deep Cover, the real Donnie Brasco Season 2. This week, we get into the business of the mafia and the hustle of hijacking. When you got guys like Sonny Black or John Gotti telling you to hand over the keys, you do it. And these guys ran some of the most successful truck jacking rings all the way to the top of the family. But when the mighty inevitably fall, what happens when they get back up? Do they leave the only life they've ever known or pick up right where they left off? Find out now on Deep Cover. The Real Donnie Brasco, Season 2.
Welcome, everybody, to the second season of Deep Cover, The Real Donnie Brasco. I'm Leo Rossi, and my partner, the man, Joe Pistone, a.k.a. Donnie Brasco. We would like to thank all our listeners out there for making our second season possible, and we are going to delve into some subjects that are very touchy. But now, Joe, how you doing, brother?
Okay, Leo, good to be with you again, partner.
Yeah, it's good to be anywhere these days, huh? Look, I would like to start. We have things that I want to get to, like which we really didn't delve into too much in the first season, was the crime of hijacking back in the 80s, big, and all that goes with. Then we're going to explain, which we have to the people and to me, the RICO Act, which was, with Joe Pistone's testimony, the RICO was the one that broke the mafia's back. And we're going to get into that right from the get. Now, Joe, there's something that's been on my mind, and I got to get it off because you're the only man that can explain it to me. And it's about the mindset of a mafia guy, a mafia member, a criminal, a lifetime criminal. Sammy the Bull Gravano, he's got a YouTube or talk show, podcast, whatever. And Sammy, for our listeners out there who don't know, he was the rat that turned on John Gotti Sr. He was put down by people in the mob, outside the mob, when he flipped. Now, he was set up with a deal with the federal government to go in the witness protection program. He and his entire family, because they worried about their safety. So he's got a stipend coming from the federal government. He is exonerated. He participated in 19 murders, and now he is out. But what happened when he got out and his family got out? He and his son, and I don't know what other family members, started a drug ring of ecstasy, the drug ecstasy, and he got nabbed and he just served 22 years in prison. He was given a second chance, Joe. He was out there free and about and hiding. Why would he do that? You know the mentality of these guys. Tell me.
Well, Leo, the mentality is once a gangster, always a gangster. For 99 9/10% of these guys, they don't know anything else. It's ingrained in them from the time they began robbing candy stores, robbing cars. The mentality is about getting over on people. And most of them, they can't get over it. That's in their DNA. Some can, but majority of them cannot. It's something that's in them. It's, you know, it's hard to explain, but if you're around them all the time, you know, like I've told you, every day they wake up thinking, is today I go to jail or is today the day I get whacked? The other thing is, who do I get over on today? How do I get over on somebody today? And like I say, 99 and 9/10 of them can't shake that mentality.
But wouldn't you think, because he's got his family involved? I mean, that is a disease, what you're telling me, because his family is involved. And it blows my mind when the guy got over on the government and he always talks about Cosa Nostra, the meaning of Cosa Nostra, which, you know, he urinated on that. But then to go out and do this, and then to be put back in jail, I believe it was state. I don't know if it was federal or state.
Now, that was state, I think.
Yeah. That was state. But then if the mafia wants to take revenge, they got him all locked up. I don't know, man. 22 years he did after he was out scot-free.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question, Leo.
Yeah.
The government says, when I say the government, law enforcement, if you kill more than three people, they classify it as a serial killer. I think it's three. Sammy claims he killed 19 for the mafia. Is he a serial killer?
This must be a trap question.
No, it's not. I mean, seriously, right?
Yeah, he's a serial killer, even if he did it on orders.
And now I'm not just talking about Sammy. I'm talking about anybody in the mob. Are they classified serial killers when they've got 5-6 hits under their belts for their organization?
No, I mean, they classify them, or the words that I hear are hitman, contract killer. I don't hear serial killer. No,
yeah.
That's an interesting point. Sammy could qualify.
Well, he killed more than three people. I think it's three. You know, it might be a couple more, but still in all.
All right. Well, didn't Lefty Guns, you know, actually, I'm starting to understand here a little bit. Lefty Guns Ruggiero, who was your guy after Tony Mira into the Bonanno family. And he did 15 years. And when he came out of prison, because he was dying of lung cancer, what did he do, Joe?
The government let him out to go die at home. And the first thing he did was he went to the Gambinos that he knew and wanted them to go look for Donnie Brasco to kill me. And he knew he was getting out of jail just to go home and pass away. And that's why they let him out, because he had terminal cancer. But all that was in his mind was, I got to kill Donnie.
So if he was let out and his health was good, if he got out, he would have gone right back to committing crimes again.
Oh, definitely. There was no reform in him. I mean, 15 years in a can did not reform Ruggiero. And I'm sure that Sammy the Bull, as you said, getting off on the first gig from the government, obviously didn't reform him.
It's a scenario where these people that are in organized crime, it's so into their, you said it, DNA, into their bloodstream, that they cannot get away. I wonder what the recidivism, that's a tough word to get out, is for organized crime members that serve their time and get out. That would be interesting to see those numbers.
I guarantee it's in the high 90s.
They go right back to the life.
Huh? Oh, yeah. What are they going to do? There's very few of them that get out of the life and stay out. There aren't many Michael Francesi's that got out of the life and stayed out of the life.
And Michael's going to be one of our guests, incidentally, listeners. He is a fascinating guy. His father, Sonny Francesi, one of the top mafioso in history. He did 50, 60 years in prison, Joe?
It's half his life, yeah.
Yeah. And he died at 101?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I'm not a convicted felon. And, you know, when the organized crime members, they were all publicized in the papers and pictures, even they try to cover their face. It must be damn hard to get a job. I mean, first of all, they're not 9-to-5ers, but what jobs do you know that mafia guys, when they got out, did if it wasn't in a criminal enterprise?
I would think it'd have to be in the bar industry, maybe, you know, service industry, trucking. I know that there was one mafia guy was a hitman. I knew him well. He actually became a government informant. They put him into the program. The job they got him was a carpet layer, laying carpet. But he couldn't lay any more carpet. He couldn't even lay down a rug that wasn't attached to the walls. Unfortunately, he became an alcoholic and unfortunately later on committed suicide because he couldn't handle not being a gangster.
To take that a step further, Michael Francese, Sonny Francese's son, he did get out. But I wonder what the children of people, and we'll talk about John Gotti Jr., who I spent 3 months with writing the script for Gotti, which they changed three times, please. Don't get me started.
But it's show business, Leo.
It's show business, baby.
That's your profession.
I can't see, and yet it happens, knowing the life, and you have said it, that a mob guy, a mafioso, they wake up in the morning, they're either going to get nabbed and go to prison or get whacked. Now, to see a kid growing up or a daughter growing up, that has to have an imprint on them in future life.
I would think so. Yeah. But, you know, the guys that I hung around with, I knew one of them whose kids didn't get into the life. But the majority of the guys, their sons got into the life. Maybe they didn't become made guys, but they became thieves, crooks.
It's not so surprising, right?
No.
It's not so surprising. Movies are made of this, The Godfather. There you go. There's the family. What was the great line? Every time you get out, they bring you back in. It's good. Okay. Now, one of the crimes, hijacking. I asked Junior Gotti, I said, your father, you know, he started out in the Rockaway Boys gang or the Rockaway gang, and then he moved up the ladder. And what was the crime or crimes that got him noticed to his capo and then to the hierarchy, the boss of the family? What were the crimes or the crime that he did? And he said, my father became a superstar hijacking trucks, big tractor trailers. That's the Gambino family. How about the Bonanno family?
Well, in the Bonanno family, there were two crews that were excellent hijackers back in the day. Sonny Black Napolitano and his crew, Big Joey Messina and his crew. They were hijacking 8-10 loads a day.
Whoa. 8-10 loads a day?
We're gone. We're missing. Oh, yeah, sure. But, I mean, the three of them weren't taking all 10. There were other crews, but these three were the main crews back in the 70s and the early 80s. They had the best hijacking crews going. Messina, Gotti, and Sonny Black.
Well, that is a leapfrog because Sonny Black, he was on pace to be the head of the family. Rusty Rastelli was in prison. Joey Messina became the head of the family. And John Gotti, they all used hijacking to leapfrog up, huh?
Well, back in the day, that's where the money was, you know, and the loads were, you know, high value pharmaceutical loads, high value food loads. Each load probably worth 10 million, 8 million, 10 million. That's a, you know, one truck load. And, you know, you're doing a couple of those a day. You're making a pretty good buck during the week.
Yeah, a little bit. Oh, my God. But they had to kick up. Yes.
Leo, in the mafia, everything goes up. Okay. Everything goes up. If you're an associate, that's a guy that's aspiring to be a made guy. To be a made guy, you got to be white, male, and Italian. So if you are and you're a good gangster, anything you gain illegally, if you're an associate, it's got to go to your soldier that's responsible to you. Your soldier then kicks up to the captain who's the head of the crew. And the captain has to kick up to the family kitty, the boss's kitty. Everything flows up.
Well, the more you earn, the more your name gets bandied about, which is what happened with Messina and Gotti. And you move up the ladder because you kicked up the money. And everybody loves that.
That's right. The more money you kick in, the bigger earner you are, the faster your star rises.
Okay, let's get to the rudimentary. You said that the guys are soldiers. So no capo would be there hands-on in a hijacking. Is that right or wrong?
No, I don't think that's 100%. It all depends on the capo.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
You get some guys that, you know, they enjoy it, and some guys they just want to sit back and collect the proceeds. But some, sure, some went out on the jobs. Yeah. And you have to remember, when these three guys were running these big hijacking crews, they were either top-ranking associates or then made guys. Some of the capos, it all depends on who they are, you know. If they can't get the thrill of the chase out, so they'll go out on the score.
That's interesting. We're going to get back to hijacking, but you just said something. When you left the FBI, you know, you were 24/7, 365 days a year, just about for 6 years. There's a certain adrenaline rush of every day, every meeting. How did you chill out from that?
I may have not been a working agent anymore, but I was still involved in all the court cases.
So you still had that electricity going on?
Yeah, of course. You know, you're still dealing with agents that are working the case. You're preparing it for court. You're sitting down with the prosecutors. You're testifying at grand juries. You're testifying at trials.
And you're seeing all your old buddies.
Yeah.
Your buddies, huh?
Not that they want to see me, Leo.
No, please. No. I didn't think they would, man.
Not on the other side of that electorate.
Deep Cover will be right back after this short message. And we're back with Deep Cover.
The great story, which you mentioned it before, Nikki Glasses, Nikki Marangello.
Nikki Marangello. When I first got into the Bonanos, Nikki was the underboss. Yeah.
And what did he say in court to you when the first time he saw you?
Well, we had a trial in the Eastern District of New York in Brooklyn, and I'm up there testifying. Now, I mean, I had probably been out, I don't know, maybe 2 years, you know, out of the undercover operation. And had testified in a couple trials before this one. I get off the witness stand and I'm walking by the defense table, and Nikki says to me, calls me Donnie. He said, Donnie, how could you do this to us? You're one of us. How could you have done this?
I mean, look, you're the Olivier of the undercover world, you know, but that's... Yeah.
Without his money.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get into that too. Okay. Now, take me through the different hijacking. You said they were doing 7 to 8 loads. How long in a day?
Yeah, that's between New York and Jersey. Yeah.
Okay. And they would be tractor trailers full of pharmaceuticals, as you said. You had mentioned to me once before, refrigerated.
Right. Well, that's the food products. Yeah.
Oh. But I mean, to me, it's like you got a whole truckload of shrimp. You better get that unloaded pretty fast, right?
Well, most of it's already parceled out before they take the load. They know where it's going.
So they have to have somebody on the inside tip them off about this load, where it's going, the route that it's going. They have to have somebody on the inside?
Yeah, well, you have give-ups, okay? And what that is, the crew might have somebody that works in the warehouse or in the trucking company. They'll tell the crew, hey, there's a load of coffee. They'll tell them the trailer number, where it's parked in the yard, and what hours they can come in and hook that up. That's a give up. So the crew comes into the yard. They know the trailer number. They either have their own tractor. If the trailer's hooked up, they'll take everything. That's one give up. Another one is they'll have a driver that's knows guys in the crew. And he'll say, hey, I got a load of whatever. I got a load of lobster. I'm delivering it on such and such a day. I'll be in this diner having breakfast or lunch. So, you know, you always leave your truck running.
Yeah, for the refrigeration. Oh, I get it. Okay.
Yeah, so he'll go in. You know, the guys are there already. He goes in the diner. They jump in the truck and take off. Or, you know, he stopped at a red light. They go up. They pull him out, jump in the truck, take off.
But he's in on it.
He's in on it. Now, they may have, again, they got inside information that this load, a load of pharmaceuticals, right? So the inside guy, he gives them the truck number, the route, where it's going. They grab him maybe at a red light, or if the guy stops for coffee, they grab the driver, take his wallet, take his driver's license and say, look, we know where you live. If you give him our description, if you tell him you saw a car, we're coming after you. So what's the driver going to do?
He's not going to open his mouth.
He's not going to open his mouth. Then what they do is they bring it to a drop. A drop is a warehouse or a garage, depends on how big the load is. And they bring it in there, stash it, and then they parcel it out from there.
And there's always somebody that wants to get a deal.
Of course.
Yeah.
Leo, I know that grocery stores, right? If it's coffee, rather than them buying it from the regular coffee distributor, they're going to buy it from the hijacking crew at a reduced price than what the wholesaler is going to sell it to them for. And then they sell it at the same price. You know what I'm saying?
Everybody's got a little bit of larceny in them, huh?
Everybody. And, you know, back in the day, I knew major grocery stores that were buying hot loads of food and stuff.
Therein lies a situation where we had mentioned Michael Francesi. You know him and you've been interviewed by him and you know him as a, you know, somebody that you respect who's changed his life around.
Exactly. Exactly.
On things that I read, in fact, on your book that you wrote with Bill Bonanno, The Good Guys, you have real good looking young mafioso climbing the ladder who got in bed with the Russians to use, and this amazed me, they would steal heating oil? Is that correct?
Well, gasoline.
Gasoline. Yeah. And they would get it from tanks and they would sell it to the gasoline owners and there was no tax on it.
Yeah, it all came down to how the government collected the taxes. And it was up to the station owner to report the taxes. So if he didn't report it and they had shell companies, it was a pretty well thought out scam and scheme. And I'm not 100% sure. I didn't work that case of how the tax actually worked, but it was the government's fault that they knew that the bad guys knew what they were doing to beat them out of millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of tax dollars.
Wow. You bring that money into a family, you're pretty well respected all the way around.
Yeah. It's all about green. It's all about earn, how much money you can bring into the family. That's the game.
Well, when you say a drop, okay, everybody's in on this and everybody's making money, so they're going to keep their mouth shut. And you explained something to me like, why wouldn't a truck driver be a hero if he's not in on it? Because it doesn't make any sense, right? You got guys with, I assume, pistolas, right?
Yeah, that's how they did it.
And they stick it in your face. And what hero are you going to be? And then they take your driver's license. So your family's in jeopardy.
Yeah, what's it for the driver? If the guy's a legit guy, his family's going to be threatened. And he knows that, you know, that these guys are real gangsters.
Okay, with the Gotti crew before he was a capo or boss, and with Messina, all that, did they have to get approval from above to even do these jobs?
The family knew that they were the hijackers. So, no, all they had to do was kick up. Whenever they got rid of the load, they just had to kick it back up.
And God forbid that there was a load they found out about that they didn't kick up on. Bye-bye, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you don't steal or hide money from the family that you've made illegally.
You couldn't even slip one in, maybe?
Why do you think guys get killed?
Yeah. Greedy, too, yeah.
That's why Tony Mira had 3 sit-downs to get me killed, because he told the family that I stole $250,000 from the family.
He wanted your ass, man.
Yeah, he did.
You didn't make a lot of friends after you came out from Deep Cover. All right, so you mentioned to me they had warehouses that they had that was theirs, and they would use it as a drop, right? How about breaking into warehouses? I mean, that goes along with the whole thing, too, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the load was in a warehouse. I mean, you know, all of this comes from inside information. They didn't just go around checking every warehouse and see what kind of loads were there. All the information come from inside. where the load was, what the contents of the load was, the best time to take it or get into the warehouse. If the guards were in on it, the guards would let them in, you know. And the same thing, you know, you tie up the guard and, hey, these guys, they got the best of me.
I mean, so guards, if they weren't in on it, you take the chance that they could try to defend their turf.
Well, they could, but I don't know, most guys, 4 or 5 guys come up on you. Why you want to be a hero, you know?
No, you're absolutely right. There's just so many Joe Pistones and Audie Murphys around.
Wow.
You know?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, but yeah, that gets also, if you break in and you don't have somebody on the inside, you got locks and all kind of synchronized devices. You got to be pretty skilled in that too, which is,
yeah,
it's a big thing. All right. Now, when you were with the Columbos, okay, they were known, this is what you told me, for house burglaries. That's what they were known for?
Well, not known for, but, you know, they did home invasions. But, you know, the home, again, everything is done by a tip-off. Somebody tips you off that Leo Rossi has a safe in his house with diamonds in it.
Oh!
You know?
That's just make, let's say a disclaimer on that.
We're just making this up.
It's, okay,
that's a
thank
disclaimer.
You.
That's a disclaimer. But I mean, you know, everything is done with a tip. Everything is done with an informer. You might have a kid that's a druggie, you know? He'll give up his father's cash, where his father keeps his cash, where his mother keeps her diamonds or jewelry, because he needs that fix. And, you know, so he'll go to the gangsters and say, hey, my father has a safe and there's a lot of money in it, or there's jewels in it, and this is where it's at. And they give him, you know, they'll either give him dope or they'll give him money to buy dope.
Now, that would seem like more of a, because you're going into somebody's house, these aren't guards, it's their home. And if people do keep guns, that could be a real risky situation.
That's a dangerous situation. You know, home invasion, eventually somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
You don't know the mindset of the father. The father might be a mean guy.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a gun guy, and, you know, nobody's invading my space, my house.
What we know about the Columbos, right? And Carmine Persico ended up being the head after Joe Colombo got shot in the head at the Columbus Day rally in New York.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that home invasion, that wasn't everybody. I mean, that was a crew that I knew. I don't think it's fair to say that the Columbos were known for that. That was just a crew that I knew that they were doing it, and they were part of the Columbos.
It's you mentioned one other thing that you talked to me about. We were having dinner one night, and we talked about, okay, supermarkets and how they unloaded stuff, you know, to supermarkets that, hey, if you're getting it for half the price for them from your wholesaler, you're going to do it. And you mentioned that a guy, Patsy Conti, owns supermarkets in New York City, right? And he was connected?
Yeah, yeah, he was.
How smart that is. I mean,
very smart.
You know.
Good businessman.
I mean, holy hell. All right, Joe, we have covered this very thoroughly. We're going to stop now, and next episode, we are going to talk about the RICO Act and its importance in making the mafia crippled, not just for a while, forever.
Next time on Deep Cover, Leo and Joe discuss the Bonanno crime family trial, the Pizza Connection trial, and how the RICO Act played an important role in the dismantling of the mafia's operations. Now, there aren't many things that are off limits to the mob, but running drugs was one of them. But when money talks, it's not hard for the bosses to look the other way.